So, hi, I'm Brian Weinert.
My name's Lael Weinert.
And we are happily married, have been for 35 years. And interestingly, it was shortly after we got married that we first became involved with the Ann Arbor Crop Hunger Walk.
We were going to a local campus chapel, Lord of Light Lutheran Church, and one of the several of the parishioners there were very active in the Interfaith Council for Peace and Justice, and they let us know what the group was doing, particularly the Crop Hunger Walk. So I know we were doing that before, right at the beginning of our marriage, and when our first child was born, we were pushing her in a stroller on one of the first walks we went on. So we figure we've been doing it for about 35 years.
And I think for us, several things kind of come to mind as we kind of reflect on CROP, the Hunger Walk, and ICPJ's role in supporting it. A couple of things that really have stuck with us over the years and made us such, I think, enthusiastic supporters of the walk and what it represents is that, first of all, the interfaith nature of the walk has always been very inspiring to us, that people across, you know, broad religious, socioeconomic, ethnic, age, tradition, could come together on this day and say, you know what? Hunger is not acceptable, and doggone it, we're going to do something about it. And they do something about it. And this walk, you have to understand, has, I think, averaged 400 to 500-plus walkers every year over the last 40 years. We're looking at raising over $2 million over that period of time. For hunger-related activities. From the very beginning, 75% of what was raised or what is raised goes to international hunger relief, and 25% stays right here in Washtenaw County to support hunger-related social service agencies in the community. And so that's one of the other things that we really like, the interfaith nature and the fact that it had both an international and a local hunger focus. Has always been to us something that's really appealing and I think speaks to the kind of the broader community. And just to note some of the organizations over the years that have received support from this walk, Avalon Housing, Community Action Network, Hope Clinic, Packard Health, the St. Andrew's Breakfast Program, Growing Hope, Muslim Social Services, Catholic Social Services, the Interfaith Hospitality Network, Peace Neighborhood Center, and others. Have been recipients of these dollars over the years. And again, 25% is going to support those local agencies and organizations. Pretty powerful stuff.
And then different congregations, either churches, temples, synagogues are given the opportunity to host the walk. So it's been hosted at a variety of different locations around the city. And it gives a lot of enthusiasm, particularly for the congregation that's hosting. They usually get a big turnout for that. But there are many, many groups that have been active with the walk for year after year. And then there are also some secular groups that are involved as well, such as service fraternities or sororities at the University of Michigan, Kiwanis, Key Club at the high schools, other schools, classrooms of children. We get a lot of kids coming, people in strollers, people bring their dogs and walk them, kids skateboard or roller skate.
People with disabilities participate. Mm-hmm. So it really is a community event, and there's an energy that's there that's hard to describe because it's beauty. It's, again, it's this beautiful quilt of people and that come together with this shared set of values and a desire to really make a difference. I appreciate what Lael said about the different congregations that host it. I think that's part of the magic of this as well. It's not just kind of the same place, same thing year after year. Each year, there's kind of a new, fresh face given to it with different congregations and a different emphasis, different kind of kickoff event before the walk begins, a different feel to what happens after the event when people gather and relax after the walk, a different route that people are walking. So that's one of the nice things, too, is people get to experience different neighborhoods in Ann Arbor, which is also a lot of fun. So I don't know, Leo, what would you say about how the walk has changed over the years? Anything that you would note that kind of stands out in that regard? Or any particular walks that, that really...
Well, we have a different focus for education, for example, each walk. We may be writing letters to legislators about the farm bill that's coming up this year and just what we want to see being voted on. Sometimes we'll have different kinds of things we're advocating for, more money to stay in the local women's children and women, infants, and children's program to have more funds diverted that way.
Yeah, and I think that part of that is that, you know, sometimes it's got a national policy focus, sometimes a state focus, sometimes a local mm-hmm. focus, and you really kind of just see what's the need, what's the issue at the time, and how can people respond. And I think that speaks to me of the beauty of ICPJ as well, that even though the walk itself is really a charitable event, mm-hmm. You know, it's about raising money to meet immediate hunger needs locally and internationally. But Interfaith always tries to incorporate into the walk and into its larger work on hunger justice issues as well. Mm-hmm. You know, what are the fundamental structures that impede the ability for people to get and remain healthy throughout their lives and have adequate diet and safe drinking water and that sort of thing.
And the organization that we partner with, the Crop Walk, is sponsored nationally by Church World Service. That's where 75% of the international dollars are going to. They also have a great program with advocacy, teaching people how to raise food and be self-sufficient, as well as providing food where it's needed, when it's needed.
Yeah. So the larger national sponsor is also in addressing advocacy issues and development issues instead of in addition to getting people fed that day. So it's a great partnership in that regard. And would just note that the advocacy work that ICPJ does on hunger goes beyond just the event usually in October each year. It's all about ongoing efforts, and that might be films, it might be, again, letter writing campaigns or kind of special campaigns, educational seminars, going out into congregations and providing information about hunger locally and internationally. We also try to support local organizations in their ongoing work. So Mission Ann Arbor, for example, we've been involved with them now recently. In reaching out to the work that they're doing in the local community. ICPJ, working with Growing Hope and Food Gatherers, started a program probably now, I think, six years ago, called Faith in Food, in which local congregations, and I think it's now something like 30 congregations in Washtenaw County that host a garden and can be from very small to very large. That grows produce, the purpose of which is to donate it through the local food bank system and food gatherers to get it in people in need. So the idea is fresh, organic, local produce that's being made available to people to kind of supplement their diet and give them some good, healthy food in the process. It's also, we're involved in that program
at our congregation. Got on board. This will be our fourth year with the Faith in Food program. We started a 50 by 50 foot raised bed garden, and we get everyone involved. We have a lot of seniors involved in the program. We've got the youth group coming to help fill the garden with fresh compost. We have Sunday school children planting little sprouts in the springtime, and we have various families throughout the year take a week to tend the garden. Each year we've turned out about 800 pounds of food.
800 to 1,000 pounds And again, you know, we're not saving the world, but we're doing something. And it's also engaging our community, Zion Lutheran Church in our case, in a very deliberate way. And more than just writing a check. I think that's part of the power to me of the Faith and Food Program. You know, it'd be easy in some ways to just, oh, let's just write a check for the equivalent of 1,000 pounds of food and be done with it. This makes it real. You're actually, you know, you're working the soil, you're breaking a sweat, you're working with other people, and it makes it more real as a result. And I think the same can be said of the Crop Hunger Walk. You know, in some ways, it'd just be easier if organizationally you just ask everybody to write a check for $100 and let's be done with it. But there's a power in bringing those people together to know, first of all, that you're not alone, that there's a shared concern, and that it cuts across every demographic you can imagine, and that we stand united. And that's a statement not just to the people involved in the walk, but it's also a statement to the community, because suddenly watching hundreds of people walk down a sidewalk carrying signs and banners sends a little message to the larger community about what's going on and that this matters. And here's a group of people standing up to say, we're doing something about it. So I really applaud that kind of philosophy that Interfaith brings to the hunger work that it does. I also wanted to just say a quick word about international hunger relief, because sometimes the question is asked, well, why don't we give more to local, to meet local needs? And there's certainly, you could certainly make a strong case, as we well know, that the need locally is great as well. But having done particularly some recent reading on the subject, there are a lot of people hurting in this world. The estimates are 800 to 900 million people on our planet, of about 6.7 billion people that are chronically hungry and face the related sickness and disease and heartache and hopelessness that goes with that. It's a number so huge that you can't even quite comprehend it. But that's a reality, and it's shocking how little we, as arguably the richest country on earth, actually give for that purpose. Doing a little bit of research, and the average American gives about 2% of their income every year to charity, so roughly 2%. And it turns out that only about 2% of that 2% actually goes to international hunger and poverty relief. I don't even know what that percentage ends up being, but it's obviously an extremely small number. And to me, it's kind of shocking. It's heartbreaking. It's unacceptable, frankly. And so I am, for one, very grateful that Interfaith has recognized this need, because in some ways it'd be easy to just say, let's just, you know, the neighbor down the street is just more visible, you know, so, and not say that the need's not there, but when you look at the resources overall that are going to meet the needs internationally, it is such a small drop in the bucket that we just really feel like we have to continue to kind of push the envelope in bringing that awareness to people and that challenge to us as Americans. Again, in recent reading, found out that if you make $25,000 a year, you are in the richest 90% of people in the world. If you make over $50,000 a year, are you ready for this? You're richer than 99% of the rest of the world. And so, you know, our poor talk in this culture is stunning at times, because we have no idea what we're being compared with in reality, you know, and there's always that richer neighbor down the street, right, or richer coworker or whatever. But the reality is, we are wealthy beyond our wildest imaginations, and there's a compelling moral case here for us to step up our act a little bit, and just really hope that CROP and ICPJ will continue the work they do to bring awareness to this issue and to make it real. And again, sometimes it's because it is so overwhelming, I think people do just kind of throw up their hands and surrender. It's like, it's just so huge to contemplate. I'll do something that has a little more instant gratification to it. But the fact of the matter is that in many parts of the world, people can be adequately fed for like a dollar or two a day. So if you look at that $2 million over the years, we've supplied a lot of meals to a lot of people. You know, even with that small, you know, total in the global scheme of things, at a buck or two a day to feed a person, we've made a difference. And we truly have saved lives in the process. This is more than some theoretical feel-good exercise. We really are saving lives in the process. So one of the other remarkable things about the crop walk in Ann Arbor is that, you know, we've now had it for 40 years, and we have never had to cancel the event because of weather. And you have to understand, this is early to mid-October in Michigan, and miraculously, it has never, we've never had to make the call. And not sure how that would play out if we had to cancel.
We've had some hot times where it's been in the 80s, kind of a Indian summer came along, and it was just as hot as could be. But there were water stops where people could stop and get refreshed and rested. And at the end of the meal, we've always had, or at the end of the walk, we've always had a meal where people sit down and have just a simple supper together. We try to keep it simple just to respect the fact that we're raising money for people who are hungry. We're not sitting down to a feast. We're sitting down to some bread and cheese and maybe a cup of soup. But that has always been a real special time for me, because you sit down with somebody you haven't met from one of the other groups and chat about it. We find that there are people who have been walking on this walk for 40 years. There's Blanca from St. Mary's and Donald McGregor from Friends Meeting House. And many others who can claim 40 years of walking. The group's changed, too, over the years. There's new ones that have added to it, and we try to keep reaching out to the new groups that crop up, and we're trying to reach out more to the university and students there and see if they won't join us as well.
Yeah. One of the interesting ones that events that we did just in the last year is we filled up gallon jugs with water, and we challenged people to take those jugs with them on the walk in a way to kind of represent and understand what it's like for many people in the world and the journey that they have to take every day to seek out fresh water. And we got, I think, 15, 20 people this past year that were willing to carry around a gallon jug of water, and nobody was particularly happy with what that burden was like, you know, walking basically, you know, 5-6 miles with that 1 gallon jug of water. But the reality is, in many parts of the world, people are carrying far more than just that gallon of water. And again, just came across a statistic recently that suggests that in developing countries, people spend 200 million hours a day carrying water or seeking fresh water for themselves and their family. That's per day. And so, again, and then you just think, that's just to find fresh water for survival. Nice. And often, and even that water sometimes is polluted and leads to disease and illness and so on. But what's the choice?
My understanding is people? It's mostly children and women.
It is mostly, yes, children and women that do it.
I remember doing an educational thing with the Sunday school kids prior to the walk one year, where I separated the kids into four different groups. And I was just trying to let them see what it would be like to be in a disadvantaged group as compared to a more advantaged group. So the first group, I gave them a bag of bread. And then the second group got a loaf of bread. The third group got a piece of bread. And the fourth group got a little crumb. So that was just representing the abundance of food compared to the little tiny bit that most people would get. And then we talked about medical care, and the first group got a picture of a beautiful modern hospital in the United States, and the second group got a clinic that looked pretty good, and the third group got this little shack that had some medical supplies, and the last group got a first aid kit. Mm-hmm. And kind of comparing, this is all you would have, hospital versus first aid kit. And we did the same with water. Great big jug of water, quart of water, cup of water, dirty water. Water also got a little less clean looking as we went along.
Yeah.
And the kids, you know, then to say, you know, this one group, you are part of just the 1% of people in the world who have these really good things. And the kids in the fourth group, you are the vast majority of people in underdeveloped countries. So I think it made an impression on them.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that has struck me over the years is how receptive and responsive kids are to this issue, and kind of to the unfairness of it all as well, to the justice side of things, which I think we as adults sometimes struggle with a bit more. And I think particularly as Americans, we do have a certain sense of entitlement or that we've earned this through our hard work, doggone it. And to begin to realize, and I think kids kind of get it maybe in a more pure way, that it's kind of the cards you're dealt. And recognizing we've been dealt some pretty darn good cards, and don't we have a certain responsibility to share that with others, and to empathize a bit with others who didn't get the good draw that we were able to get. Watching that awareness in kids is really an inspiring thing to behold.
Yeah, our own kids grew up doing the crop walk from
being
in the stroller and getting pushed in the beginning to the first time that they could really walk on their own. And I remember our eldest daughter bringing up the end of the crop walk.
Oh, yeah.
Both then and then again when she was pregnant with her first child, she brought up the end of the crop walk because she was the slowest walker again. And now she's pushing a stroller with her youngest in the crop walk.
And one nice story with that is that our oldest daughter, now engaged, she's a school teacher here locally, and she engages her class every year in participating in the crop walk.
When they were fifth graders, they were so excited. I think there were about 20 of them. And she gave them each a crop walk sponsor sheet, and they went out and got sponsors. Some of them sat outside of a local grocery store and just asked everybody who went in and out if they would sponsor them on the crop walk. Those 20 kids raised $2,500 that year. It was really quite incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And then each year after that, they never could quite match the enthusiasm that they had in the fifth grade. But I've always felt that that was just a perfectly receptive age to realize, to be able to look outside of yourself and realize that there are other people and to empathize with them and to have the kind of pure enthusiasm that they showed that year.
Yep. I think even for kids and grown-ups, to even just participate once, it kind of changes things for you. You know, it makes you a bit more aware of that larger world. And again, hopefully taking some ownership in trying to make a difference. And you got to understand, too, that when we started this, or when ICPJ started the crop walk, we were about the only walk-a-thon there was in the community. We were pioneers in the walk-a-thon idea. And Leo and I both grew up, when we were kids, our churches had these hunger walks and in Detroit area. And it was the only game in town. And now there are dozens and dozens of walks and runs and bike events and variations on the theme in the community that we're now having to kind of compete with, and just kind of scheduling the walk on a weekend that doesn't have other such events can be a challenge. And it's tougher now because, in a way, we are competing with those other walks and events for attention. But we broke ground with this idea. And I think hunger walks in general broke ground with it. And again, I think part of the idea behind the walk initially was to create or build a certain solidarity with poor people who have to walk everywhere for everything that they do, including getting food and water. And others have built on that, again, as a way to be public in whatever the cause is. So it's a special thing.
Back in the 80s, I was looking for a job I could do for Interfaith that would be helpful, but I needed to work from home because our first child was born and more on the way. So I was given a job to put a mailing out every month to people who had pledged to make a donation on a monthly basis. We called it the ABM Club, stood for a buck a month. Some people pledged much more than that, and some people did, a buck a month. But it was also the acronym for anti-ballistic missile, so it was kind of a little inside joke. So each month I'd get a letter from the staff, and I'd mail it out to 100 people with a return envelope, and then they'd mail back their pledge for that month. That was back when people liked to do that regular kind of giving, and it was an effective fundraiser for a long time.
And I just want to say a word about our involvement and commitment to ICPJ in general. ICPJ was founded on the idea of really kind of fighting the twin evils of war and poverty. And, you know, as we kind of step back and look at the state of the world, those are, to this day, remain, I think, the two largest challenges facing humanity and the rest of creation. And for us as people of faith, you know, we've always been drawn to opportunities to actually impact the world in a positive way. Certainly, you know, love the spiritual element of our tradition and respect and honor the spiritual traditions of others. But I think for us, for both of us, always felt this call to make a difference in the here and now, that's part of what it means to be a spiritual person. So to be able to do that, in our case, not just with fellow Christians, but to also then experience the joy that comes with being able to work with people who are very different from ourselves in that process has been extremely inspiring and affirming. And I have to say, you know, just personally, and I don't think I'm particularly alone in this, you know, it's hard to break out of the shell. It's hard to break out of the hanging around the people that are kind of just like you. And ICPJ has been extremely helpful to me in prodding me to get outside of kind of my own clan, in engaging with people who are different than me, but yet share some fundamental commitments, again, in fighting war and poverty in particular. So for me, and I think for Lael too, ICPJ has just kind of been tailor-made for our identity as people of faith that also care about what's happening in the world and wanting to make a positive difference and getting beyond just charity. And again, there's a place for charity, there's a need for charity, but to be able to raise those underlying root causes of those twin evils and to really try to make a sustainable, institutionalized sort of difference in people's lives has just been wonderful, and we just were really blessed to live in a community that has such an opportunity.